the last 4 weeks or so, the pastors have been doing some practical teaching. You know, there's a benefit to teaching, right? Preaching is really directed at the heart. So we, in the pulpit, a pastor really directs the teaching to heart-related issues. And the teaching in Sunday school is really practical stuff that that we can use. And so, you know, thank you, Dan and Pastor Jeff as well, to teaching on prayer and teaching on Bible study. The next 2 weeks, maybe a third, depending on how fast or slow I am, is really going to be focused on finances and giving, right? So what I thought I would do is maybe just talk generally today about financing, and then next week, if you come back, I'll give you the exact dollar amount that that you should give. So, right, so we're going to talk about money and possessions. If we talk about the basics here, we see in Deuteronomy 10 and then later in John 14. In Deuteronomy 10, verses 14 through 7, we hear from the Lord, who says that everything belongs to the Lord your God, the earth and everything in it. And so now it sort of sets the tone for the relationship that we have with our stuff, the, you know, our job, our time, our money, and the things that we might sort of acquire throughout our lives. And so understanding economics, this is a social science, if you will, it's really about the study of what people and countries and regions, it's really about how they allocate their resources, whether whether those are natural resources or resources that you have, like your own self, your time, your labor, or you know, limited resources that we might find from employment or inheritance and things like that, right? So all of that stuff, economics is about how we distribute and make decisions about those things. So so we'll have that bit of a mindset. But let's talk about Americans for a moment. What is the number one expense that Americans face in their household finances? What do you guys think that is? Well, what's the biggest expense? What's your house, right? So, so it is very normal. It's common for Americans to have a mortgage or pay rent, and that is about 30% of the budget for the average American. Okay, so beyond that, the second expense, and this is after tax, that for some of you that might be the number one expense, but is food, which you would expect, and right behind that is debt service. Okay, so 10% of the average American budget goes to debt beyond the mortgage, cars, credit cards, anything else that you may service from a debt standpoint. Our economy, all of our activity as Americans in our national economy, generates almost $30 trillion in production in terms of money growth movement on a our economy is a $28 trillion economy, and that doesn't really mean anything to us, but for the sake that Americans have $18 trillion in debt service. So 64% roughly of our economy is debt. So our economy functions on debt, which means interest rates is everything for us. That has really grown in the last 4 years. You guys can figure out why that is, but inflation has really caused many both old and young to finance more of their lives because of the expense of things. Everything costs a little bit more, so people are financing things. But I would say that generally speaking, our country has a debt problem. Okay, so it's one thing that we as Americans have gone into debt ourselves, 65% of the economy, but we have an uncle, his name is Sam, and he likes to spend as well, and he owes more than 35 trillion. So all of our efforts in commerce to work, to do business, to transact, is quickly being overwhelmed by what we owe as Americans and in our personal finances, and our corrupt overlords owe as well as a nation. So we are we're severely in debt, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. Why does that matter? Well, in the garden, Adam gave us the first example of what it means to be an image bearer. Genesis says he was created in God's image, and because of this, and because of his deployment in the garden, he is king over nature. And of course, we participate in this. So man rules the world as a representative on God's behalf. So that's that, and I'm going to talk about it in another language as well. But humans are the only part of creation that is created in God's image. And the text in Genesis doesn't immediately explain all of that and what it means. But in chapter 2 of Genesis, it says that God put Adam in the garden to take care of it. In the curse, and of course, Eve as his helper. But the curse in chapter 3 gives us a hint that there's a delineation of roles. Like it's not sort of a free-for-all, but there's some focus on Eve and childbearing and the role of the household, right? And there's certainly a hint of Adam and plowing the fields and sort of working the fields and so on. So there's some delineation there a little bit of men working the earth that God has given him, and women helping, supporting, creating, and caring for a large part of that in the family role. So just a couple more big picture things. How we handle our money in the parable of the talents, right? Which Matthew 25 is where we find that. The way that we handle what the master has given us in a way affects our relationship with him. In other words, the servant who was condemned was the servant who acted as if the master wouldn't return. So one servant doubled the money, one grew it by 10x, and one buried the money, right? And so it's not a lesson about who got the highest CD return at the bank, but rather it was a lesson of who acted as if the master didn't deserve a return on his money and didn't expect the master to return. So beyond that, what we do with our money, right? If Ryan buys an American car and Catherine buys a foreign car or some of like these kinds of things, these decisions really reflect what we think of God. It really shows where our heart is and what we value and even perhaps our motivations, right? So if we come at it from this this idea of everything is God's, we are to reflect his image, his priorities, his value system in the world, we really act as fiduciaries. And so what that means is the job that you worked all week to make a dollar and get paid isn't really your money. It's not your labor. It's not your money. It's not your good fortune or bad fortune, rather. But we act as a fiduciary, and that word means that we're a representative to act in the best interest of someone else. And so the decisions that we make about our possessions, our time, our finances, is most of our life. I mean, that is a very practical piece of our life, and really that demonstrates our faith in Christ, and it is not our own to make, you know, sort of any to live as any way that we might want to. And so if we are a nation in debt, for example, we have some problems. We have some competing affections. If we spend money that we don't have, then our hearts are making big bets on things that maybe aren't in line with the master's value system. So anyone do like, what is it, Ramsey's Financial Peace University? Is that okay? How about Crown Financial? Anyone kind of go through Crown Financial? They have a financial program? Nothing? Okay, interesting. So you all have heard of Dave Ramsey, right? You've heard of, you know, I listen to him on the radio, and I'll make fun of him later. But as a fiduciary, we need to be looking at our finances. If it's all his, we should live like it. How we treat our finances reveals what we think of Jesus. Do we act out of love for him? Do we say Jesus will return and yet live like he won't, like the servant in the parable of the talents? So what we do with our lives demonstrates our faith and certainly to a large degree our relationship with Christ. Okay, so what I have are 8 things for image bearers to kind of keep in mind as we sort of walk through life. And these are the 8. I know my writing isn't the Cliff Buttermore style of writing, and it's perfect font, so I'll read it. But 8 things that are, you know, sort of like biblically based concepts for us to wrestle with. So number one, so this is some life stuff, and this is some more practical finance stuff. But number one is to practice honesty. And I'm going to have you go to a few pieces of scripture, and Leviticus is a good one. If you want to go there, we go to chapter 19, and the law, which we're not under the Mosaic law, we can probably agree on that. But the law tells us a lot about God's economy. Tells us a lot about what God sees as important, right? And of course, Jesus reveals more about God, and we'll look at what that means for us later. But if you go to 19 and verses 11 through 13 are good. It says, "You shall not steal, you shall not deal falsely, you shall not lie to one another. You shall not swear by my name falsely and so profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. You shall not oppress your neighbor or rob him. The wages of a hired servant shall not remain with you all night until the morning." So there's this concept in here about dealing, in righteousness with people that you have transaction with, right? So their economy was a little bit different than ours, particularly, if you owned land, you would farm the land in, culture, Israel culture, but the world at the time. And so if you didn't own land, you might work on that land to plant and harvest and manage that land. So that's the relationship. So the idea in verse 13 is the idea of sort of like you've got somebody who is a day worker who would be paid for that day, and not to mess with their pay, if you will, not to mess with what you owe them here. So there's a concept of not taking advantage of others, and through all of this, God says, "I am the Lord. I am holy. You are as my image bearers, as my fiduciaries. You represent me, and so you will keep my name as honored and revered." Deuteronomy talks about you shall not have in your bag two kinds of weights, large and small. Deuteronomy 25. You shall not have in your house two kinds of measures. Like there isn't a friend's measurement for what you may owe in a transaction, and then a non-friend's measurement where you take advantage of somebody else, perhaps who's not a neighbor. And Deuteronomy 25, 15 says, "A full and fair weight you shall have, a full and fair measure you shall have, that your days may be long in the land that the Lord your God is giving you." So he's reminding them of the fiduciary relationship that they have with him. "For all who do such things, all who act dishonestly are an abomination to the Lord," right? So we have this in the law, and then Peter in 1 Peter 1 says, "Hey, be holy in everything that you do," that there is a high standard here of not cheating those that we would enter into business with. Peter says, "He who called you is holy, you also be holy in all your conduct." And then he refers to Deuteronomy 25. "You shall be holy, for I am holy." So the idea in as we live our lives and we go out in commerce is to not be people who take advantage of other people in a transaction, act anything less than, sort of full disclosure and things like that. So an example of that might be selling cars is a horrible thing. It's like it's a stressful thing when you're selling a car you own, right? So you do this transaction, and if someone comes to buy your car and he shows up and your driveway or parking lot or whatever. And what if you're selling a car that has stuff wrong with it, right? I
I feel like I've got to say, like, hey, you know, this, you know, this doesn't work, or that, like, the goal in that transaction is not to sell a $5,000 car for $10,000, right? That is, you know, there's an honesty and a righteousness, certainly a holiness aspect to that transaction. Now, a lot of people do that, right? And I've been on the other side. I bought, you know, a car that upon driving it home, it you know, it's held together by, you know, baling wire and tin cans and things like that, right? But that's not the type of action that an image bearer should be, you know, taking in that relationship. In other words, the one taking the advantage of that. So it is better for us to act honestly with the world, with each other, and trust the Lord with the details of that, right? So so practice honesty, and we see it looking through Leviticus 19 before we leave that. There's a lot of great stuff in there about how you deal with your neighbor in verse 15 through 17, and there's even if you look in verse 9, there's this direction about harvesting your land, and you don't harvest every last penny of it, right? So if you're the person who has to squeeze every last penny out of the transaction so that the person on the other side of your transaction hurts, right? That's may not be you know, the best representative of the way the Lord would have us deal with somebody, right? He talks about, hey, leave a little something on the edges. We don't harvest every last kernel of corn from the field that those who are unfortunate who would come through and glean it, you know, leave something for them. So that is a fair economic approach to your business transactions. So practice honesty as an image bearer. Secondly, seek counsel. Now, there's plenty in Proverbs, but we see a lot, particularly in the Old Testament, of stories of leaders, of judges, of kings, and we see this contrast of kings who seek counsel, nations who seek counsel, either from the Lord or from God's people, and we also see the consequences of kings who don't seek God's counsel. Right? We see this contrast, and of course, Judges is full of that. And Proverbs 12 says, "The way of a fool is right in his own eyes." Right? That sounds like every chapter in Judges, we saw that people did what's right in their own eyes, right? And it was a great offense, and so it was an offense to God. But they also sort of ruined, you know, their leaders in this nation. You see this cycle of utter ruin and the progressive decline in nation Israel from the start to the end of Judges, right? So acting without counsel, if you are entering a large transaction, maybe it's a house or a car or you know, decisions that are weighty, decisions that that maybe don't have a bailout where if it goes wrong, you can work out of that, right? A wise man seeks the counsel of others, right? And so we get this example practically through the Old Testament for sure, and then of course wisdom in Proverbs crying out to us to seek counsel, and so we should we should have that approach. And if the things that we do with our resources, with our time and our money reflect our faith and our relationship with Christ, many of the times that these are spiritual decisions. These are decisions that should be, carefully processed. And because we are, idol worshipers in our hearts. Get somebody to help you in transactions. Get a second look. Okay, so thirdly, as representatives, we should work hard. We should be known as employees, and for those who are no longer employees, even in things like church and so on, employees are to work hard regardless of your employer. And so the second text, so we start in Leviticus. I want to jump to Ephesians 6. If you want to look at that, let's go to we'll go verses 5 through 9. So Ephesians 6, 5 through 9 says, "Slaves, obey your earthly masters with fear and trembling, with a sincere heart as you would Christ, not by the way of eye service as people pleasers, but as servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, rendering service with a good will as to the Lord and not to man, knowing that whatever good anyone does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether he is a slave or free." And it says, "Masters, do the same to them and stop your threatening, knowing that he who is both their master and yours is in heaven, and that there's no partiality with him." So this is Paul giving practical wisdom to our labor, which is one of those economic components that I referred to in my opening remarks. So if we were to treat our employment situation like, "Hey, I'm getting paid to work, but maybe have this. Hey, if I can get away with not working, right? That's their problem, right?" And so, sort of shaving time, maybe where you're paid for a certain amount of time, but skipping out early or maybe not finishing the job, making it look like the job is finished. This kind of approach is really against the honesty practice that we looked at in Leviticus, and here we see that if your master, your employer, is not a good one, how should we treat them? As if they were, because our work is not for that master. Our work is for our master. So as a representative of Christ, our responsibility is to serve him in the job, not to, my boss gives me too much to do, and so if I do this job in a poor manner or slipshod manner or make it look like that's someone else's fault or something, that's not an honest approach and not a biblical approach. And so so we get this caution to render service with goodwill. So our master gets our best as an offering to Christ and not as a, I didn't get the full amount of the raise that I think I deserve, and so they're not going to get 100% of Bill Connell's labor or something like that, So so we need to be careful there. Proverbs warns us in Proverbs 18 that a lazy person is as one who destroys things, right? So so there's, you've got this positive effect of work. That's a positive thing, but not working is sort of is a negative. And so we are cautioned against being idle, I-D-L-E, in 2 Thessalonians 3. Like if we're just sort of sitting on our hands and letting others do the work. James warns us against being lazy. So we have this character trait as an image bearer of being somebody who commits, who works hard, does what they're supposed to do, and does it well. And think of Jesus. We did our Mark study, how the people would say about Jesus, God's perfect image bearer, he does all things well. Do you remember that phrase? And they would talk about him in his ministry. And so so we should be people who do things well in our labor, no matter who we happen to be working for. So consider that. The last piece here on the life guide from Bill here is to save consistently and plan for the future. And so Proverbs 21 has a lot to say about both of these things. Verse 5 says, steady plodding brings prosperity. Hasty speculation brings poverty. Okay. And so so we have this direction against sort of the get rich quick kind of a mindset that we aren't to be characterized by the the best example I can think of is my high school experience, right, where I would be given an assignment, right, and a real assignment, 8 pages due on Friday kind of thing, and to be lazy and not work the assignment until the night before, and then sort of like, I'm going to dig in and whip something up, and boy, it's going to be a winner, right? It rarely was the kind of quality that that I had hoped for, right? I was taking a gamble. I was lazy. I was not applying myself. I was not giving my best, and sort of throwing a Hail Mary on game day and hoping that it would work out and I'd represent myself well. So we do that. We can do that in other things. We can be bad savers, and in the last couple years before retirement, we could take a large amount of risk with our investments and hope that works out, right? If I need a certain amount for income, right, I can be left devastated by that, right? We wouldn't advise somebody to do that, right? Do you guys come from families where your parents talk to you about money? Yes. There's definitely, previous generations maybe wouldn't talk about that stuff so much, I'd like to think that we did in our house with our children, right? If if you're age 50 and you start thinking about retirement, there's a really good chance that you're too late to do it well, to save well, right? There's plenty of data to suggest that that's the American way. So the average balance for a boomer's 401k is less than 100 grand, right? It's just not likely that retirement will be from money they inherit. That's the takeaway from that. So plan and save verse 20 of that same Proverbs 21 says, precious treasure and oil are in a wise man's dwelling, but a foolish man devours it. So there's this, like, there's this warning against immediate gratification. You get a paycheck, and you consume it all without a thought for the future, having store, and that affects us if we are to be known for our care and hospitality and grace. If you are leveraged and have few options financially, it becomes very difficult to serve others. We'll talk about that in a moment. So think the long term and save and small, steady plotting. Okay, so spend wisely. So now we're over in this is the more exciting side. We've laid a foundation in our economics lesson here. And so number five here, we want to spend wisely. We need to be thinking about where the prize is. And so so two things. Hebrews 12 says the prize is heaven. It's not here. And so so as image bearers, we need to have the right sort of weighting with W-E-I-G-H-T. The weight of our lives should be long-term, post-earth thinking. Like, we should be thinking with the end in mind rather than how much can I get, how much can I, take from my employer, how can I live my best life now, right? We've heard language like that, and the prize is not here. So your whatever you can imagine on Facebook as the best life, if that's a, you know, monster property on Island Lake with the boats and the cars, all of that pales in comparison to eternity. It looks really worthless in God's economy. So we need to have this mindset of what is here is temporary, and filling up the there's nothing wrong with having, you know, good things, quality things, but chasing those things and making those things your idol is a fool's errand. It's temporary and not eternal. If we go to 1 Timothy 6, let's jump over there. One more thought there. There's some good counsel from Tim in chapter 6. So in verses 6 through 8, he says, now there is great gain in godliness with contentment. For we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. But if we have food and clothing, with these things we will be content. Right? So there's a caution that comes right after that. It says, those who desire to be rich fall into temptation. If that's your thing, if that's your brand of the American dream, right, it's a dangerous one. Why? Because you can fall into a snare, into senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For that, if money is your idol, if being rich is the magic here for you, you can get caught up in all kinds of trouble where you are compromising who you are as an image bearer of Christ in exchange for extra dollar, the better car, the bigger house, these kinds of things. In verses 17, as he sort of finish this up, there's some warning here. So there are rich people and there are people who are less rich in this world. For the most part, Americans are wealthy. The poorest of us are wealthy on a global scale. The poorest of us are in the top 1% of the globe in terms of wealth, right? So if you've got an apartment, a phone, and a car, if your apartment has AC, you live better than billions of people on the planet, right? But there's this warning of putting our hope and our certainty in our wealth. Tim, in verse 17, don't set your hopes on the uncertainty of riches, but on God who richly provides us with everything to enjoy. So your best life in the here and now, okay, is enjoying what the Lord has given you. Enjoy it, love it, be content. Be not like, you know, thinking like, well, you know, if only I had this, if that guy makes more money than I do, like, I wish I had a car that never broke down. These kinds of, like, that's it's folly, and you're sort of chasing, nothing if those are the things that you're chasing. So enjoy what you have, where you're at, and no matter how humble that is, look at verse 18. Do good, to be rich in good works, to be generous and ready to share whatever it is you have, thus storing up treasure for themselves as a good foundation for the future, so that they may take hold of that which is truly life. So having, you know, better clothes and a faster car and bigger isn't life. That's not that isn't joy. And so I'm in the business of handling investments, right? So I meet people that I've seen everything. I've seen people that have massive amounts of debt and great jobs. I've seen people that have a lot and have a little, and I cannot overemphasize how miserable so many people are at the top. The people that we think have it, you know, the CEO types, the executive suites, you know, these are people who have virtually no control over their lives. They take better vacations than you do, and they drive better cars. There's no question about that. But they take their phone on vacation because, you know, the CEO, the president who is making $1 million a year, like, he doesn't ever get a day off. There's never a day off, you know. They own you in those roles. So we ought not to be sort of chasing that thing. We're already owned by someone, a far greater master. So sort of keep that in mind as you're kind of, considering where you would place your hope, your trust, your hard-earned dollars, to be sure. Okay, so we are here. We're here and avoiding debt. Oh, I'm over. I'm sorry. I wasn't even. I'm just having so much fun. I apologize.